morning, everyone. How many of you guys know what the word SUID means? Is it something that everybody's sort of gotten comfortable with? Everybody knows SIDS, right? So I've been doing child death reviews since 1994, and at that time, we were really looking only at SIDS deaths. So that was basically the sudden death of an infant who died suddenly and unexpectedly in a sleep situation when there was a complete autopsy, a death investigation, and a review of the medical history. In the years that I've been doing this work, we've really had some shifting going on so that we've expanded our thinking on what a SUID is. And what we think of today as a SUID, or a sudden unexpected infant death, is that there's no obvious cause before investigation. It can be explained after an investigation. It usually occurs during sleep, and it's really difficult to distinguish what we normally would have called SIDS in the old days from other sleep-related deaths. And that's partly because we don't have really good agreed-upon standard definitions other than for SIDS. If death scenes aren't comprehensive and completed well, we don't get enough information to be able to call these deaths what they might be. And the autopsies alone usually find in these deaths absolutely no significant findings. So regardless of what they might be, you can't really tell on the autopsy. When you sort of think of it, there's really two categories after you've done a good scene investigation and an autopsy and a review of the medical history, is you're going to end up with deaths that are explained, and that could be children with heart defects, head injuries, some homicides, maybe an infection, maybe an overdose, versus the unexplained. And in that, we have the SIDS and what we're calling undetermined cause, and some people would say those are the same things. And then we have this group of deaths that are called suffocations. And more in the country, we've seen a huge increase in suffocation deaths. The rates have actually quadrupled in the last few years. They're now the number one leading cause of infant deaths infant accidental deaths, which has really been a change because it used to be motor vehicle forever. Now it's suffocation deaths. The other thing is, and I can't believe I didn't put my epi slide on here, the SIDS rates have really bottomed out, so to speak. They're starting to decline a little bit. They declined really significantly in the 90s when we had the Back to Sleep campaign, and now they've sort of equaled out. We think it's partly because 25% of the population are still putting their babies face down to sleep, and we're thinking that that has some kind of relevance there. But the other piece is we're seeing an increase in undetermined and accidental deaths due to suffocation. So there's definitely been a diagnostic shift. This sort of describes, in the old days, the pendulum was definitely towards SIDS. Actually, if you go before the 1950s, the pendulum was the other way, which these were all called suffocations. We shifted the pendulum in the 80s and the 90s to SIDS. Very few were called asphyxias. And today there's been this shift back the other way in terms of a diagnostic shift. And it's still a mystery for a lot of people. A lot of people really have a hard time getting their hands around what's going on. This was an article from 2006, new clues reveal that SIDS may be a disease, not a tragic mistake. Now, if you saw this article today, it might actually say new clues reveal that SUIDs are tragic mistakes, not a disease. I mean, it's all over the place in terms of where people are coming from, trying to make some sense of this. So part of what we've discovered is that when I started this in 94 and we were looking at SIDS deaths, it was actually rare for there to be a death scene investigation at the place where the baby died. Most of the information was coming from interviews with the parents in the emergency rooms. I don't know if all of you remember the old SIDS adage, which was there was nothing you could have done to prevent your baby from dying. This is a mystery. We don't know what caused your baby to die, but you couldn't have done anything to prevent it. So, and these are just sort of typical scenes that as you look at them, you sort of go, how did the baby die? The baby was sleeping in these places, but how did the baby die? There's really no way to know. But what we're starting to see by doing quality scene investigations is now we're starting to have a little bit of reaching some consensus around in terms of medical examiners and death investigators. So I'm just going to give you some examples to show you why death investigation has become so important. So this is a 3-month-old infant sleeping alone in a pack and play on their stomach on a pillow face down. And the question now a death investigator would ask, or a child death review team would ask, is how did this baby die? Was it SIDS, asphyxia, undetermined other? And now that we have scene investigation photos, because part of what we've been really trying to push is death investigations, we're able to actually find out and see the placement using dolls of where the babies were placed in these sleep environments. So this baby was found sleeping face down in a pillow. We recently gave these photos at the National Association of Medical Examiner meeting, and the room was completely split over whether they would call this undetermined or asphyxiation. And I think we only had three SIDS. Three people raised their hands and said they would call this SIDS. Then we asked the team, you know, what would happen if the baby's face was to the side? Well, the room shifted. The medical examiners, it shifted. Then it was mostly either undetermined or SIDS, but not asphyxia. And then we asked, what if the baby had been placed on their back and hadn't been checked for 10 hours? Parents were intoxicated when placing the baby, and there were multiple CPS referrals for neglect. We had a real change in opinion. Most people said it shouldn't matter, that these things shouldn't matter because it's really where the baby was placed and found. Others felt that these had some real implications. I'm presenting these just to show you the complexity of what these cases can look like in the field. This is a two-month-old sleeping with parents, unresponsive 2 hours later when the parents fell asleep. Parents were average weight, no substance use, average type of bedding, light sheet, light comforter. Baby found between but not covered by blankets or the parents' bodies. So that's what this baby, what it was like when this baby was found. And then you have to ask yourself, what is this? SIDS, asphyxia, undetermined. You know, how do you determine that? Our medical examiners, again, half SIDS, half undetermined. And then we ask the question, what if the father reported that the infant was under his arms when found? So this is where the baby was found. And it went almost unanimously in that room to suffocation rather than undetermined or SIDS. Then we talked about, what about the six-month-old infant sleeping alone at crib on their back? What are you going to call that? And that's what it looks like. And to be honest, we don't see a lot of these in the field, but there's sometimes you do find them. And our medical examiners pretty much all called that a SIDS. They see this as sort of that pristine environment. It's even wearing its Crib for Kids onesie. What if the baby was 3 months old, placed on an adult bed face up, found 45 minutes later on the floor, face down into a sheet on a hard floor surface, neat home, no concerns about caregivers, licensed daycare? What are they going to call it? So that's where it was placed, and the baby somehow or another was able to fall off the bed and found with its face onto the floor. This one got a little harder. It was still confusing. People still didn't know where they'd place this one. And then when we asked, what if the house was dirty and messy, prior child abuse allegations, and the floor was shag carpet, it added another layer of complexity that people needed to think about. So what are they going to call it? And I raise these questions because the other piece is, why does it matter? And it matters a lot because one thing is it leads to our better understanding of what the real risk factors are in the cases. It leads to our need to understand and provide support to families. Is it important to tell the families there was nothing you could have done about it? There was nothing you could have done to prevent the death? Or is it important to provide the family with enough information so they can understand it? And I threw this up there just to show you how far we've come. I found this was an air nurse bed. For tending baby at home, for tending baby while visiting, for tending baby while bathing, and my favorite, for tending baby while traveling. So we have come a long way, and it really does matter for us to try to understand what's going on with these unsafe sleep environments. So what happened a few years ago is the CDC and the National Center for Child Death Review, we started thinking about this. How do you make sense out of all these cases that are being reviewed across the United States? And it's about 2,500 a year. I guess almost 4,000, right, when you put everything together. About 4,000 deaths. How do you make sense of what's going on? And what we know is that you can't really make sense. And sorry, Maggie, because you work National Center for Health Statistics. We can't make sense by looking at the death certificates. Because many of these deaths the medical examiner might put on their sudden unexpected infant death. They might put sudden death, bed sharing. Those will end up being coded as SIDS. So the death certificate in and of itself doesn't tell us enough. So what was decided, as Lena mentioned, is it was decided a number of years ago to build upon child death review activities, which are happening out in the field, to use the results of those multidisciplinary case reviews to try to gather more complete and comprehensive data and then to feed that into a registry. So what the registry does is it uses pre-existing variables from child death review. It integrates and adds these to a child death review case reporting system. By funding the states, we've been able to improve their ability to review and monitor all SUID cases in their states. That's sort of the grant requirement for the states. And as you'll see from our examples later on, it's really improved the state's abilities to improve investigations and develop prevention programs because they have a better understanding of what's going on with their deaths. Just for those of you that don't know what child death review is, it's a process in place that tells us where you bring a multidisciplinary group of people together to share comprehensive case information on the deaths. And it's focused on improving systems and preventing deaths, so you're really trying to bring a lot of information together. It's not about affixing culpability to individual folks. And it's really trying to use the individual case reviews with an accumulation of case information from multiple cases that you've reviewed so that you can start understanding trends. In 2013, we had child death review in all the states. There's about 1,250 local and state child death review teams. We also have teams now in Guam, the Department of the Defense. The Navy is actually reviewing all deaths of infants in unsafe sleep environments. And then we've just started building child death review in tribes, and the Navajo Nation is actually going to pilot a child death review program very soon. With child death review, the good thing about it is that it's mandated by law in 44 states. 34 of those require local teams. And of the states, all 50 states, 39 of our states have community-based teams, and then we have a number of states that only have local teams, like New Hampshire. So a number of years ago, with child death review, and I'm funded mostly by HRSA, HRSA funded the development of this National Child Death Review Case Reporting System. And what that is, it's a web-based reporting system. It's currently in use in 43 states. It's got about 1,800 data elements. And you've got a little handout that I passed around that sort of explains the system. But it's a voluntary system that the states agree to participate in. And what they do is they fill out this tool for every death that they reviewed. And when we got the funding for the registry, the decision was made to add more questions to this case reporting system that would drive the registry. So that's sort of what we've been doing is we added, unfortunately for our state grantees, 4 pages of questions. So it provides us with a whole lot of comprehensive information. And then the states are sort of required to try to collect at a minimum, 32 of the really, there's 32 questions that we're really trying to tell them that they absolutely have to collect out of this form for the SUID cases. So these are the states that are using the case reporting system. We only have a few that are not currently participating. And then these are the grantee states. The amazing thing is when we got the grantee states, a number of other states said, well, we want to have those extra 4 pages of questions. I was sort of stunned. You know, because it is a voluntary system. States aren't getting any money from anybody to use this tool. And as of today, these are all the states that are currently collecting the SUID questions. And then this month, we launched our new version, version 3.0 of the case reporting system, and this map will be 100% filled in because it's not an option now for the states. Everybody's going to be collecting the additional information for the SUID cases. So what the registry is, it's a process that has to involve a multidisciplinary team review, bringing people together to review these cases. It's qualitative and quantitative. It's used as a tool for assessing and improving case investigation, and it's a real vehicle for driving action, as you'll hear from our presenters. One thing about it is it's these are sort of all the data sources that feed into the registry. So it's everybody that comes to a review meeting would bring their own pieces of these pieces of their own investigation. So you'd have EMS, medical records, CPS records, all of the stuff from the medical examiner and law enforcement investigations. And then it's all brought together at the case review. And then the goals would be to conduct surveillance, categorize SUIDs using standard definitions. We're not going to get into that so much today. Monitoring trends and describing demographic environmental factors, regardless of what these are actually called at a local level. So it doesn't really matter what the medical examiner coroner calls them. They're all going to be reviewed, and they're all going to come into this registry so that we can look at them that way. Some of the variables, if you're, you know, that are collected, there's many, but some of them are lots of questions on the infant sleep environment, whether their face was covered, whether whether their nose and mouth were obstructed or partially obstructed, a lot of information on the maternal health status and infant health, and then a lot of questions related to the quality of the investigation itself. One thing that the registry is not, it's not a data linkage process. So it's not just taking a bunch of data sources and linking them, it's actually having all that information come together. And the team itself is the one that kind of creates all those variables that go into the form. It's definitely not a fill-in-the-blank exercise, and it's not an isolated process that the CDC is sort of doing on their own or one agency is doing out in the field. It's a real multidisciplinary approach. As of June, we had 1,225 cases entered by our 9 states. Our goal was that they would be, our goal was data completeness, and one of the amazing things with this registry is that our states reached 80% completeness on the 32 core variables, which is really wonderful, especially when you look at the other data that's in the system and the number of incomplete cases that we have. We also found that the system is already improving death scene investigation. So in 2010, only 71% of the cases in the system had a completed SUDIRF that's a comprehensive investigation tool. In 2012, 87% of those were having comprehensive scene investigations going on. And my last slide is just to mention, these guys are going to talk about data to action, but my last slide is just to talk about the registry that Lena mentioned. So we're going to adapt that exact same model and create a new module for sudden death in the youth, and then we're going to use that and fund states to actually collect that and start getting better information for deaths up through, I think, age 24.